Good morning. Today's Daf and Ksuvos Chaf Tes. We are starting here today the third parak of the Masechta. We move on to a new topic here in Ksuvos, and we're going to be talking about Onus and Mafata. So let's start off with a general introduction to this particular topic. We're going to be spending the entirety of the third parak, a little bit of the fourth parak as well, on these particular halachas, and they're going to be indelicate. Let's say it right on the front end. In other words, we're going to be talking about a man either raping a woman or seducing a woman, and the ramifications of such an act. Just as a quick personal anecdote, so going back to my days in YU, I was had the schutz of learning by Rav Braunschweigel, and we learned together the third parak of Ksuvos. It was a very popular parak to learn in the yeshivas. It still is a very popular parak to learn in the yeshivas, and that's a little bit odd, meaning young men are learning this particular topic. It sounds a little bit strange. But the upshot is that in this parak, as you're going to see, so this is one of this particular parak in Shas is going to be dealing with the idea, the concept of kimle b'derabim minei, that you have two onshim, you have two punishments that come that result from one act, and as a result of that, you're only going to be getting the harsher of the two. So this is an idea which obviously is a very exciting idea. So, and it's a strange place where it manifests, meaning in this particular halachas of onus and mafata. But nevertheless, kim lebe derabim is so exciting. So this parak became very popular amongst the yeshivas and the bnei yeshiva. In other words, it kind of separate yourself from the actual topic at hand. Meaning that we're talking about onus and mafata, which obviously are very uncomfortable ideas. But at the same time, that within the context, within the structure of kim lebe derabim, so it became a very popular parak amongst the yeshivas. I remember one day. This is going back many years ago. I remember one day Rav Braunschweigel. So he quipped. He told us. Boys, when you go home and they ask you what you're learning in yeshiva, so why don't you try to explain to them what you're learning in yeshiva? And he was amused by the idea that this may not go over well amongst the parents. But nevertheless, as we know, it's all chelek haTorah, it's all part and parcel of Torah. And so as we learn about these uncomfortable and indelicate ideas, but it's all part and parcel of Talmud Torah. With that stated, so let's get into these particular topics of Onus and Mafata. Just one other comment before we go into the introduction, the intro to the intro, and that is, why here in Ksuvos? Meaning, this is not a Ksuvos topic, although that's not totally untrue, meaning one of the ramifications of Onus and Mafata, that it does lead to marriage, oddly enough, which we're going to get to in the intro. But why bring it up over here in Ksuvos? Meaning, this is not so much Ksuvos related, this is more about chavalah. It's more about injuring another person. So why here? So that's a really good question, and there are answers offered by the Rishonim to this question. But nevertheless, I'll raise a question. I'm not going to go through the answers right now in terms of why this parak comes up over here in Ksuvos. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a better place in Seder Nashim where this topic should be brought up. Maybe Kedushin, maybe, I don't know. Okay, in other words, but it's here. In other words, it finds itself here in the third parak of the Masechta. It is kind of self-contained, meaning after we get to the third parak, there's going to be a little bit more talk in the beginning of the fourth parak of Onus and Mafata, and then that's it. In other words, and then the Masechta moves on to discuss the actual topic of Ksuvos, but okay, it finds itself here. Okay, that's all intro to the intro. Now the intro. Okay, there are two parshios in the Torah that deal with the topics of Onus and Mafata, so let's start off with Onus. So a man is ma'anis a woman. So first and foremost, again, the most obvious thing I could say, and that is it's usur. It's absolutely prohibited for a man to ma'anis a woman. Now, that, again, should be obvious, and it is obvious, but in the Torah itself, the Torah doesn't frame it as an isur. The Torah just talks about the fallout, the ramifications of what happens when a person does so. So just even before that, just to state the obvious, meaning it's usur. Under what umbrella? What's the isur itself? So the issue is chavala, meaning that you cannot injure another person, meaning it's assault. It falls under the category of nizke haguf. You're being mazik another person. So obviously you're not allowed to do that. And it doesn't matter what the confrontation is whether it's a man to another man, a woman to a woman, or a man to a woman. In other words, it falls under the category of nezik, and therefore nezik is obviously asur. So just to start off nice and clear, and that is that we're talking about an isser. But if it happens to be that you're involved in this isser, so the ramifications are going to be different than typical nezek. Now, by nezek, let's just start off like this. By nezek itself, so what is one obligated when one hurts another person? He injures another person. So that's the eighth parak of Baba Kama. The eighth parak of Baba Kama goes through all the tashlamim. In other words, the answer to nezek is remuneration. In other words, you have to pay for the nezek in which you did, even though the Torah says ayin tachas ayin. But we know that it's not ayin tachas ayin, it's kesef. In other words, you have to pay. And in terms of how to assess the payment, so you go through the eighth parak of Baba Kama, which im yirtzeh Hashem, we're going to go through in the not so distant future. And so it's five different types of payment. Actually, we're going to be discussing that over the course of this parak. And here it's no different. When a man is ma'anis a woman, so it's nezek, and therefore you have to pay nizke mamon. You have to pay the nezek. You have to pay for the damages. Okay, that's all. That's the foundation. That's the background. Now, on top of that, there's also other onshim that come together with with onis, meaning in addition to it being nezek, there's also, now what else is there? So let's start off with the psukim. Really, we need to know the psukim in order to appreciate and understand the upcoming sugya. So I'm just going to be running through the pasuk. First, the psukim regarding ones. This is in Dvarim, in Perichav Beis. So, ki imsa ish nara besula asher lo arasa. So a man finds a woman who is both a nara, which means that she is already 12, she's no longer katana, and she's not yet a bogeris. The period of nara goes only for 6 months, from 12 to 12 and a half. And so during this period of time, and she, on top of that, she's also basula. And she, not mu'reses, meaning she's not married. Usfasa v'shachav imah v'nimtzu. And a man takes her, and he sleeps with her. Now, number one, what he has to do is he has to pay kenas. The kenas is a 50 shkalim. Now, this is in addition to the niske haguf, meaning he has to pay nezek. In addition to that, there's also a kenas. What is kenas? The very definition of kenas is that it is something that is punitive, meaning aside from the compensation, there also is a punitive payment that is paid. And this is going to be paid to the father of this woman. So that's number one. Velosi Eliisha Tachas Asherina. And number two, he has to marry her. In other words, now, the Gemara is going to be clear about this. We're going to see this together later, not today's daf. And that is that obviously only with her consent, but if she consents, now, admittedly, it's going to be strange if she does consent, but it's strange to us because it's not exactly the same society, so it would be difficult for us to imagine that she would concede to such a proposition. But if she does, so the Torah says that he has to marry her, and on top of that, lo yichal shachal kol yamav, and he cannot divorce her, meaning now he's bound by an isser of the Torah to divorce her. Okay, so there are, in addition to the niske haguf, in addition to chavala, there are going to be three ramifications for a man being a man as a woman. Number one, there's a knas. Number two, he has to marry her if she concedes, if she consents. And number three is that he may not divorce her. There's an isser now for him to divorce her after he marries her. Okay, that is by ones. Now let's take a look at mefata. Mefata is found in Parshas Shmos, Sefer Shmos Parshas Mishpatim. It's found in Perichav Beis there as well. Okay, it's going to be a little bit easier to remember, by the way. Chav Beis in Dvarim and Chav Beis in Shmos. So in Perichav Beis, so the Torah writes as follows: V'chi yifate ish besula asher lo arasa. So a man is mefate; he seduces her, which means that at first she was not interested, and then he makes overtures and pleads and begs and she finally consents before the act. So this is now no longer falling under the category of onus. This falls under the category of pitui. V'chi yifate ish besula asher lo arasa. And again, she's a basula and she's not married. V'shachav imah mahor yemarena lo lisha. So what he has to do is that he has to take her as a wife. That word mahor, so it's an interesting word, hard to give good definition, but basically, right. In other words, in the commitment that a man makes when he marries a woman, it's a financial commitment, so he's got to make that commitment here as well. So im ma'in yemayin avi alasita lo. Now, if the father steps in, the father says no. Now, again, we're going to learn together in the Gemara. It's not only the father's right to say no. It's her ability and right to say no as well. But the Torah is being mechadish that the father can also veto this marriage. So, imayin yamein avi lesita lo, kesef yishkol kemora besulos, then he has to pay her. Now, here by mefata, we don't know how much he has to pay her. It's going to be chamishim kesef. In today's daf, at the end of today's daf, we're going to see together how we know that, but we know. It's chamishim kesef, it's going to be 50 shkalim, meaning a kanas. Okay, so we have basically two parshiyos in the Torah, one in kiseitze, the other in mishpatim. The kiseitze deals with onis, and the mishpatim deals with mefate. Okay, now, what we're going to be learning today, the first mishnah here on this topic of onis and mefate, what we will be learning together is the following. As we pointed out, in addition to it being chavalan, in addition to just the standard niske haguf, there are three consequences. One, knas. And let's focus today on ones. That's really going to be our focus for today. So one is going to be knas. Two is going to be he's going to marry her. He has to marry her. And number three is that he's not allowed to divorce her. Okay. So now today, here's what we're going to be focusing on. Let's say a man is ma'anis a woman that he can't marry. The Torah prohibits the marriage. So in other words, so two and three now are going to fall away. Is there still going to be one? In other words, is he still going to have to pay a knas for the act that he did? And the answer is going to be yes. Our Mishnah tells us that the three do not go together as a bundle. In other words, even if we're missing two and three, there's still going to be one. There's still going to be a knas. That's what we're going to be learning together in the Mishnah. Let's begin. Elon Arshishlam knas. These are the women who have a knas. Meaning, despite the fact that you are not allowed to marry these particular women that we're going to enumerate, nevertheless, he's still going to have to pay kanas. Haba al ha mamzeres val nesina val akusis. A man has relations with a mamzeres, obviously a mamzeres, and isudar raisa. A man is not allowed to marry a mamzeres. Nesina and kusis. Okay, so we could be spending the rest of today talking about nesina and kusis, and if you overheard my chavrusa this morning, so you heard that that's all we were talking about, but we're not. In other words, I'm going to give a really simplified, streamlined approach, and it's going to be an oversimplification. But a nesina, so we're going to go back to our Gemara Yevamah. So Gemara Yevamah says that there was a group of people, they were givonim, they came to Yehoshua, you're going to find this in the ninth paragraph of Sefer Yehoshua, they came to Yehoshua and they said to Yehoshua, we are coming, we're traveling, we're out of town, we're not kananim, and we want to make a treaty with you. And so then after Yehoshua made a treaty with them, they were then discovered that they were in fact givonim. And so what Yehoshua said is that, okay, gzeira derabanan. Now the gzeira derabanan is that you're not allowed to marry somebody who is a nasin or a nesina. In other words, so as an issa derabanan, you're not allowed to marry them. This is the way Rashi presents it, so that the issa derabanan that was imposed by Yehoshua is that there's an issa derabanan to marry anyone who's a nasin. Okay. Tosfos nearly loses his mind over this, over this presentation of Rashi. Okay. But for today, I'm just going to present Rashi. That's all we'll do today. I will remind you, however, the Gemara in Yevamos, which we did not so long ago, had actually three steps to the Gzera Derabanan, right? The first wave was actually done by Moshe. Second was done by Yehoshua. Third was done by David. So, okay. It's complicated. And right now, I'm not going to deal with the complications. I'm just going to present it that there's an issur derabanan that you're not allowed to marry them. Okay, good. And point is now, according to our Mishnah, is that you're not allowed to marry them, but there's still going to be a knas. Let's move on to kusi. Okay, we've gone over this numerous times. Happens to be that today's daf is the daf, would be the daf in which you're going to be discussing it in detail. Again, I'm not going to discuss it in detail. I'm only going to present it like Rashi, although Rashi's presentation, quite frankly, is really challenging. It's difficult. Meaning, okay, even in the context of our Gemara, it's really difficult. But I'll present it like Rashi. But before we get to Rashi, so again, just a little bit of background. So after the 10 northern tribes were conquered by Sancheirav Melech Ashur, so they were displaced, all of the northern tribes were taken out of Eretz Yisrael and sent away. Hence, the 10 lost tribes. We don't know where they are. So and what did Sancheirav do? Replace them with foreigners, specifically a group of people from the land of Kusa, and hence the people that were living up in the north were Kusim. They were non-Jews, and the Navi goes on to describe how they were attacked, and they were attacked by lions, and for the fact that they were being Ovid Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, and so they realized that hey, this is not working out for us, meaning. Apparently in Eretz Yisrael, we can't do this Avodah Zarah thing. Okay, fine. What do you want us to do? You want us to convert? They converted. Okay. And from that point, for centuries onward, so a major debate that took place in terms of whether or not the conversion was a legitimate conversion or an illegitimate conversion. The way the Gemara describes it is whether or not kusim are geri emes or geri arayos. Did they convert because they wanted to convert? That's geri emes, and therefore they're Jewish. Or did they convert because they were forced to do so? Hence the term geri arayos from the word ari, lions. The lions forced them to do that. And so this debate existed for centuries. They're right on through the Baisheni, even beyond Baisheni. The Gemara and Chulin arrived at a conclusion that they were geri arayos. But that's already by the Tkufa of the Amoraim. If you were by the Tkufa of the Mishnayos, which we are right now, we're learning a Mishnah. So where are we? We're on the fence. Some are of the opinion that they're geri emes. Some are of the opinion that they're geri arayos. Rashi is of the position. Okay, and I know this is going to be difficult. Rashi is of the position that our Mishnah subscribes to the viewpoint that they're geri arayos. And since they're geri arayos, so therefore they're not going to be, you can't marry them because they're not Jewish. Okay. Now what makes Rashi difficult over here is that we know, we learned it earlier in our Masechta, that for a non-Jew, a man's ma'anis a non-Jew, there's no kenas. Meaning again, it's chavala and you have to pay the nezek and this ke chavala, but there's no kenas. You don't give kenas to a non-Jew. Oh, so that makes Rashi difficult over here. Meaning that if you're subscribing, if our Mishnah is subscribing to the viewpoint that they're geri arayos, so then they shouldn't be receiving a kenas at all. Okay. And I'm just acknowledging that Rashi is difficult. Tosfos, big Tosfos over here. So Tosfos asks that question, in addition to others as well. Tosfos gives a different way to present the Mishnah. Again, for our purposes right now, I'm going to leave it at Rashi. So far, Mamzeres, Nesina, and Kusis, these are women that you're not allowed to marry, and yet they're going to receive a kenas. Again, the whole point of the Mishnah is that these three consequences of Ones are not bundled together. They could be separated. Even though you can't marry, you're still going to pay a kenas. Continuing in the Mishnah. Habala Gyoros Valshava Vashiv Khashinifta Vishniskar Vishnishtachru Phusas Mi Boshalshan Vyamechad. A man has relations with any one of these converts, right? Not true. The Shui is not a convert. But a Shivcha and a Gyoros are both converts. And if they converted under the age of three, so now what? The assumption is that they're a basula. Meaning even if they had relations prior to 3 years of age, the basulim grow back. And therefore, they are a basula. And the payment of kenas is a function of them being a basula. That's clear in the pesukim. Therefore, a man is ma'anis, any one of these women, and shvuya included as well. Meaning, if she's a shvuya, so again, going back to what we discussed extensively in the second parak, a shvuya, if a woman is held captive, the assumption is that her captors had relations with her. And therefore, she's no longer a basula. But if she was captured and released before she was 3 years of age, the assumption now is that she is a basula, and therefore she is going to be receiving a kenas. And then the last chiddush of the Mishnah is the following. A man has relations with one of the arayos, they're going to receive a kenas. Now, why is that a chiddush? It's a chiddush because there's a significant punishment for having relations with any of these women. These are all arayos. The baseline punishment for all the arayos is kares. Now, for some of them, it's mises beisdin, but every one of the arayos, it comes within an onus of kares. The Mishnah over here is highlighting these women who are iser kares, but not any other onus, meaning no onus, no mises beisdin. It's just kares. And so, now, what could you argue? There are two punishments that the person's looking at. One is both the kenas and kares, meaning can you get both? Our Mishnah is clearly of the position, yes. Because here we're not going to apply the principle of Kimle b'derabim minei. Kimle b'derabim minei is only when the two onshim are corporal, or when they're coming from Beis Din. Over here, one is coming from Beis Din, that's a kenas. The other one's coming min hashamayim, that's kares. That's compatible. Those two can coexist, according to our Mishnah. Good. One detail over here, it's an important detail. And that is that one of the examples over here that's given is Eishes Achiv and Eishes Achiaviv. Now, Eishes, right, the wives of, right, either your brother or your uncle, which again is an erva. She's a basula, meaning, again, the whole premise of receiving a kanas is that you were ma'anis a woman who is a basula. So she was a basula, and that's why, look at Rashi. Rashi over here is sensitive to this. Rashi says, shenizkachalo v'girsha. Yeah, Rashi says exactly. In other words, kiddushin took place, and then the divorce took place. So she can be, it's like a riddle. How can a woman be an erva to you, having been married to either your brother or your uncle, and still be a basula? But the answer is actually very simple. In other words, kiddushin creates the arayus, but they were divorced before kiddushin occurred. And so as a result of that, right, correct. In other words, after kiddushin, before nisuin, so she's an erva and she's a basula. Okay, that's an important detail. Okay, we go on to the Gemara. So really, there's one point in the Mishnah. There's a lot of details in the Mishnah, but there's really one point in the Mishnah, and that is the decoupling of the kanas and the marriage. Even though you can't marry her, nevertheless, there's still going to be a kanas. That's the main point of the Mishnah, the Gemara. Gemara starts off, Hainin Aras Psulos Yislu Kanas Ksheres Lo. So you can make a diuk in the Mishnah, but the Gemara says, of course it's going to be a ridiculous diuk. And that is that in the Mishnah, what it sounds like is these women get a kanas when they're psula, but if a woman's kshera, she's not going to get a kanas. Now, that's, of course, ridiculous, but that's what the Mishnah sounds like. So the Gemara just simply cleans up the language of the Mishnah. Hachi kamar. Here's how you understand the Mishnah. Elonaros psulos sheish lam kanas. Habala mamzeres valenasin valakusis. Okay. So when you read the Mishnah, the correct way to read and understand the Mishnah is that these are the naros hapsulos. Despite the fact that they're psula, despite the fact that you can't marry them, they're going to receive a kanas. Meaning, of course, it goes without saying that if she's a kshera, there is going to be a kanas. Next. Nara in ketana lo. Okay, so as we've gone over numerous times, we're in Seder Nashim. So for us, this is like ABCs. And that is that there are three developmental stages to a woman. One is that she's a ketana. From birth until 12 years of age, she's a ketana. From 12 to 12 and a half, she's a nara. And from 12 and a half and onward, she's a bogaris. There are going to be occasions where she could skip her stage of Nairus, but let's just right now focus on a straightforward, streamlined development of a woman. There are three developmental stages. Now, there are halachas that pertain to a woman during all these three stages, but our focus right now is going to be on the fact that as a Nara, so she is on one hand an adult, on the other hand, she's still under the jurisdiction of her father, right? Nara is a blended stage, as opposed to where she's a ketana, where she's not an adult and she's fully under the jurisdiction of the father, and by a bogeris, she's a full adult, no longer under the jurisdiction of her father. So, but when it comes to a nara, so it's a blend. She's an adult, but she's still under the jurisdiction of the father. And so what it sounds like from the Mishnah is that when a man is ma'anis a nara, so then she's going to get a kenas. But if a man's ma'anis a ketana, so then the father is not going to be receiving a kanas. Now, again, don't overthink it, meaning, right, it doesn't mean, I'm stating obvious points over here. It doesn't mean that, therefore, it's okay. No, it's just as usher. It's chavala. It's just as prohibited. It just simply means that that our Mishnah subscribes to the viewpoint that when she's a katana, so now the only thing that is going to be removed is the kanas element to it. That's what it sounds like from the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, and that's correct. Meaning, there is a Tana that subscribes to that.
But
so,
Bogeris, there's no Knas.
No Knas. But Chavala. Presumably no. In other words, the marriage just seems to be tied to the Knas.
It's tied together.
Yeah. So, Mantana Amarav Yud Amarav Rebbe Meirhi. Okay, so our Mishnah subscribes to Rebbe Meir. The Tanya will enter the Braisa Ketana. Mi Baz Yomecha V'yad Shetavi Shtei Saris Yesh Lamecha. So a ketana from one day old, meaning from birth, until she is physically mature. So yesh lamecha, meaning for her entire period of ketana. So the father has the right to sell her. Okay, this goes back to Parshas Mishpatim. So the father can sell his daughter into a call of servitude. Probably not the best way to describe it, but in other words, she is going to be, let's just say it. She'll be owned by another person. Now, the truth of the matter is that's ownership that leads to marriage, meaning the intent of the Torah is that when someone buys her, in other words, what he's really doing is that he is going to end up marrying her. In other words, it's kind of understood, although quite frankly, he doesn't have to. Either he marries her or his son marries her. Okay, the father has the right to sell his daughter. So, and that is while she's a katana. Ve'in la knas. Now, but at this point in time, however, there's no knas. And then mishitav v'shtei saras v'ashiti bager yesh la knas ve'in la mecher. Devar Rabbi Meir. Now, what happens when she becomes a nara? So here it gets flipped, meaning that there's going to be knas, but there's not going to be mecher. Meaning knas, okay, that's in other words, the Torah says that when she's a nara and a man is manis her, so the father's going to receive a knas. On the other hand, father no longer has the right to sell her. Again, this is the blended stage of being a nara. And then Shaya Rabbi Meir Omer, kol makom sheish mecher, ein knas, v'chol makom sheish knas, ein mecher. And then, it's just a good way to think about it, and that is that mecher and knas, according to Rabbi Meir, are mutually exclusive. When there's mecher, there's no knas. When there's knas, there's no mecher. V'chachamem omrim, ketana mi'ba shol shanim v'yam echad, v'ashiti bager yesh la knas. So, and the chachamim disagree. The knas is going to be imposed on the ma'anis, even when he's ma'anis a ketana. So, kenas din mechalo. Now, the Chachamim's position, the way it's phrased, is a little bit confusing. And the Gemara immediately unconfuses us. Lo, ema, don't say that there's kenas but no mecher, but rather what you should say is af kenas b'makom mecher. Okay. So that there's going to be kenas and there's going to be mecher as well while she's a katana. So we have a basic machlokus amongst the Tanayim in terms of when a man is ma'anis a katana, is there in fact going to be a kenas? Rabbi Meir says no, and that's the pashtus of our Mishnah, and the Chachamim disagree, and the Chachamim say that there's going to be a kenas even when she's a katana. As we already pointed out in our intro to this perek, from the Torah itself, sounds like Rabbi Meir is right. Sounds that way. What does the Torah describe in clear terms? The Torah describes a man being ma'anis a nara. In fact, the Torah says the word nara not once, but twice. So from the pashas of the Torah, it sounds like it's a nod towards Rabbi Meir. Obviously, the Chachamim have a Misorah that even though the Torah uses the word nara, it's not limited to nara. It would include a katana as well. Okay. And we'll do that more as we go through this parak. Now, v'hani b'nei kenasa neinu v'amai. Okay, the Gemara now is going to ask the question, which is really going to be the main point of today's daf, and that is the decoupling, meaning the fact that the Torah levies three onshim on the man who's ma'anis a woman, in addition to it being chavala. I know I've said that many times. I'm obviously trying to reinforce that point. Okay, sometimes misunderstood, not properly viewed, but okay. In addition to it being chavala, so there are three onshim that are levied on the man. One is that if there's a kenas, two, he has to marry her, and three, and then he may not divorce her. He's not allowed to divorce her. So, within that framework, so now the Gemara is going to ask, wait one second. In other words, if these three are a package, so how can we unpackage? How can we decouple? How does that work? That's the Gemara's question. V'hani b'nei kenasa ninu v'amaya ikrei kan v'losi alisha. Isha haru yalom. So, how can that be? Meaning that if the Torah tells us that there are three consequences and they seem to be bundled together, so how can they be unbundled? Okay, that's the Gemara's question. I'm Rish Lakish, so the Gemara is going to give an answer. Okay, it's a drasha answer. In other words, the Gemara is not going to give us svaras over here. It's just based on a series of drashas. So, nara, na'ara, han-na'ara. Go through the psukim. We did so at the beginning of today's shir. I'm not going to go through it again, but it says na'ara two times. I know from the Gemara it sounds like three times, but there are three drasha opportunities. It's the first time it says na'ara, in the second pasuk it says na'ara. Actually, in the second pasuk it says han-na'ara. And so what we're going to do is that we're going to darshan two and three from that second word. Na'ara is the second drasha, and the extra hay serves as a third drasha. And so now, three drashas. Chad legufei wants to tell us the baseline halacha. Chad la'asuyi chai v'lavin. And the other wants to tell us that even if a man is minus a woman who is an iser lav to him, nevertheless, he's still going to pay knas. And v'chad la'asuyi chai v'krisus. And the third time to include also chai v'krisus as well, as we saw together in our Mishnah. Meaning a man is ma'anis any one of the arayos, it's an iser kares, or for that matter, a nida, that's an iser kares. Nevertheless, he's still going to have to pay a kenas. So that is the way Abai explains it. Rav Papa, Amar Besula Besulos, Ha Besulos. So again, same idea. We're darshaning from the word Besula. It says it not once, it says it twice. And then the second time that it says it, it also adds an extra hay as well. Chad legufei v'chad lechayvei, chad lasui chayvei lav, v'chad lasui chayvei krisos. Okay. And again, with those three drashas. Now, the classic back and forth in the Gemara. meaning Abaye didn't learn it from Rav Papa's Basula, and Rav Papa didn't learn it from Abaye's Nara. Why not? Rav Papa, my time Allah, my Karish Lakish. I'm sorry, I said Abaye already a number of times. If we can, just edit, go back, and it wasn't Abaye, it was Reish Lakish. Okay, fine. So Rav Papa, my time Allah, my Karish Lakish, so right, and Rav Papa hold like Reish Lakish. So how we buy Lelechada Abaye? Okay, now I know why I got confused. Okay, good. Anyway, because he needs it to teach me a different halacha, notably, Damar Abaye, Ba'alaha, Umesa Pater. A man is ma'anis a woman, and she dies before he paid her. He actually paid. So now, as a technicality, so now he doesn't have to pay knas. Why not? Shenemar v'nasana la'avi anara. La'avi anara v'lo la'avi mesa. In other words, as part of the prerequisite of the father receiving the knas is that her daughter has to be alive. But the daughter is no longer alive. So it's a technicality. So just simply going to be exempt from knas. Reish Lakish, my time, Allah ma'akar Rav Papa. Now, why isn't Reish Lakish subscribing to Rav Papa? Meaning, why didn't Reish Lakish go with Rav Papa's Basula, Basulos, Ha Basulos? So I'm by Leila Gzeira Shava. I needed to teach me the Gzeira Shava. What Gzeira Shava? Detanya, Kesev Ishko, Kamara Basulos, She Eze, Kamara Basulos, Kamara Basulos, Kaze. So in other words, this goes back to a point which I alluded to earlier in today's daf, but now we're going to spell it out. Meaning, if you compare and contrast the Psukim, again, they're two partios. One in Mishpatim and the other is Kiseitze. Mishpatim is Mefata. Kiseitze is Ones. And when you compare the two of them, so each one of them is missing an important piece of information. In the Psukim, as it relates to Ones, so the Torah there says that you're going to be paying, just looking at the Psukim. So, V'nasan Aisha Shochevim Alavien Ara, Chamishim Kasef. So it says 50 kasef. And then if you go to the psukim regarding pitui, it says, so kesef yishkol kamara basulos. You're going to give her kesef. So, I'm sorry, kesef yishkol. Sorry, the focus is on the word shekel. Okay, so, in the parsha of Mefata, it tells us what the currency is, but it doesn't tell us an amount. In the parsha of Ones, it tells us an amount, but it doesn't tell us what the currency is. So what do I do with the gzera shava? The Gzera Shava links the two together. So now I take the currency and I take the amount and I put the two of them together. So now I know both currency and amount. And so therefore, for both Onis and Pitui, it's going to be Chamishim Shekel. Okay. And that's what the Gzera Shava gets us to. So, Kesev Ishko Kamar Basulo, Shehezek Kamar Basulos, Kamar Basulos Kazeh. Good. Vesh Lakish Nami Mibaile Lechada Baye, and Rapapa Nami Mibaile Lechzera Shava. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. We're trying to explain why it is that Abaye doesn't hold like Reish Lakish. I did that again. That why Rav Papa didn't hold like Reish Lakish. Why Reish Lakish didn't hold like Rav Papa? Because they needed for other drashas. Wait 1 second, says the Gemara. They both agree to the other drashas, meaning they're both right. I need the psukim to teach me all these halachas. So the Gemara says, you're right. El Shisa Krai Ksiva. So the Gemara says, when all said and done, what Reish Lakish and Rav Papa, I did it correctly. What Reish Lakish and Rav Papa are doing over here is that they're really giving us two sides of the same coin. Meaning, I take the total number of drashas, which is 6 in total, and now what we're going to just do is we're going to plug it in to teach us all these halachas. And that is, Nara, Nara, Ha, Nara, Basula, Basula, Ha, Basula, Trelu, Gufayu. So again, so you're going to need to teach me the baseline halacha. Meaning that there's a parsha of Onis, and there's a parsha of Mefate. And then Chalecha da Abaye. So another one is to teach me the halacha of Abaye. Again, what's the halacha of Abaye? That kenas is only there while the daughter is alive, but if the daughter, Rachmanis, if she dies, so then there's no longer kenas, it's a technicality. And v'chalik zereshava, the other one's to teach me the zereshava. Again, the zereshava is to tell me that I'll take the currency and I'll take the amount, I'll put them together, and that's how much you're paying for both Ones and for Mefate. And Iyasu Lutre, now of those 6, how many are accounted for? 4 of the 6 are accounted for. Which means 2 are available. Now, what are the 2 going to teach me? Well, we know already. Chala suy chave lavin, chala suy chave krisos. So one's to teach me chave lavin, the other one's to teach me chave krisos. Meaning, despite the fact that a man is ma'anis, either a chave lavin or a chave krisos, and despite the fact that he is not allowed to marry her, nevertheless, there is going to be a kenas. Meaning, that's exactly the point. We have 2 extra drushas to teach me this halacha of decoupling. In other words, that it's not bundled together, it's not a package deal, even though, despite the fact that you can't marry her, nevertheless, there's going to be a kenas. Good. That really is the main point of today's daf. I would dare say we're finished with today's daf, but we're not. We have a little bit more to go. I'm going to start this next sugya, but the truth of the matter is that this next sugya really goes well into tomorrow's daf, but let's start it off. Ula afuke mi hai tana. Our Mishnah is precluding the following Tanaim, meaning our Mishnah is representing the shita of a tana, but not all Tanaim are on board with this with our Mishnah. In fact, as the Gemara is now going to point out, there are Tanaim who disagree with our the basic premise of our Mishnah. The Tanaim we learned in the Braisa of Elosi Elisha, Shimon Atemani Omer Isha Sheishla Bahavaya, Rav Shimon Manasi Omer Isha Haruuya Lekaima. So according to these women, according to these Tanaim, so the, according to these Tanaim, that a woman is going to get a knas when you can marry her. These Tanaim are of the position that if you can't marry her, there is not going to be knas. Meaning these Tanaim are of the position that these halachas are not to be decoupled. They are bundled together, and when you don't have one, you don't have the other as well. Okay. In other words, then they don't agree with our Tana of our Mishnah. So, and now these Tanaim are seemingly saying the same thing. Meaning they're the, both Tanaim are named Shimon. One is Shimon HaTemani, and the other one is Shimon ben Manasseh. And so they say that in order for there to be a kenas, it has to be a woman you can marry. Now, Shimon HaTemani, the way he phrases it, is Isha Sheish Ba'avaya, where you could be Mekadishar. And the way Shimon ben Manasseh says it is Isha Ruh Lekaima. You can marry her. Sounds similar, right? But they can't be the same, because then they wouldn't represent two different opinions. So the Gemara points out, Mai Benayu. So there's got to be a difference between them. It's subtle, but there's got to be a difference. So I'm Reb Zera. So the Gemara is going to now go through a series of possible nafkaminas between these two. So I'm Reb Zera. I'm Zera. So Nesine Kebenayu. Lamanda Amar Yesh Ba'avaya. Hanami Yesh Ba'avaya. Lamanda Amar Ruh Lekaima. Ha'ina Ruh Lekaima. Okay, so just giving examples of Lavim in the Torah. Mamzeris and Asina. They're both Lavim in the Torah, and you can't marry her. So, Kedushin are going to be Tofes, yes or no? The answer is yes. So there is Bahavaya. So let's say you're Mekadisher. Can you keep her as your wife? The answer, of course, is no. You must divorce her, because the Torah prohibits that union. Even though the Torah will acknowledge and recognize the Kedushin that you are Mekadisher, at the same time, however, you can't keep her as a wife. Torah prohibits it. You must divorce her. Ah, so that's going to be a difference between the two. So that is one possible nafkamina between them. Ula Rabbi Akiva Damar in Kiddushin Tovs Mechayv Elav Mai Beinayhu. Ah, but let's say we subscribe to Shitas Rabbi Akiva. Now it happens to be the halacha does not subscribe to Rabbi Akiva, but we're not talking about the halacha right now. We're talking about the Shitas HaTanayim. Let's say these Tanayim do in fact subscribe to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that there's no Tfisas Kiddushin by Chayv Elavin, a point that we've gone over numerous times in Yavamos. So if you subscribe to his viewpoint, so then, Mamzeres and Nesina, there's no Tfisas Kiddushin. And therefore, this wouldn't be a Nafkamina. So, Beinayu Amon Kohen Gadol Karebi Sinai. So the Gemara says a Nafkamina would be a Kohen Gadol and an Amana. Even according to Rabbi Akiva, despite the fact that the Torah prohibits a Kohen Gadol from marrying an Amana, there will be Tfisas Kiddushin. Rabbi Akiva says there's no Tfisas Kiddushin by Chayv Elavin. This is what you would call an exception. So, D'tanya Rabbi Semai Omer min hakol ha'oser Rabbi Akiva mamzeres chutz mi'aman al kohen gadol she'arei amar Torah lo yikach v'lo yichalal chilulin ha'oser ve'ein oseh mamzerim. Okay. In other words, it's an exception based on a drasha that a kohen gadol marries an amana. Even if I subscribe to Rabbi Akiva, that is not, the child is not going to be a mamzer, but the child is only going to be a chalal. Okay. Right. Everything's relative, meaning a chalal is certainly better than being a mamzer. Okay. Next sequence of the Gemara, and tomorrow that's where we're going to continue. Okay, let's pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Okay, let's quickly recap. We started the third parak of the Masechta. We are going to be focusing throughout this entire parak on the topic of onus and mafata. A man is minus a woman. A man is mafata a woman. And then what? So as we pointed out at the intro today, before we get to and then what, let's go over the first point, which again is basic and obvious, but let's spell it out. And that is, it's an Isser Gomer. A man cannot do that. A man is prohibited from doing that. It's no different than Chavala. It's assault. And the Torah prohibits a man being Chovel another man. So over here, a man's being Chovel a woman. And so therefore, it's Usser. Now, being that that's the case, but if he does, So he has to pay the nizkei chavala, which again the Gemara is going to spell out. We're going to see that later on. But the opening discussion that occurs regarding onus and mefata is the punishments of the kenas and the nesuin. Then when a man is ma'anis a woman, when he's mefata a woman, so he pays the kenas and he also has to marry her. And once he marries her, he cannot divorce her. So that's the halachas as we learned in the psukim, both in Kiseitse and in Parshas Mishpatim. So the Gemara really today really made one singular point, meaning if we could summarize today's daf, it's really just but one point in today's daf, and that is that this is not a bundle. This is not a package deal. Now, despite the fact that the Torah lumps the three of these together, they are not necessarily tied together. And that means to say that if a man's minus a woman that he cannot marry, nevertheless, he's going to pay her kenas. That really is the entirety, that is the singular point of today's daf. We learned in the Mishnah, through various examples in the Mishnah, even if a man is ma'aris and iser kares, still there's going to be a kenas. Obviously cannot marry her. By onesh of kares, even just having beer with her is an iser kares. But he cannot marry her, and yet there's going to be a kenas. That's the point of our Mishnah. As far as the Gemara is concerned, the Gemara made a number of points. First of all, how to read the Mishnah correctly, meaning the Mishnah makes it sound like a ksher is not going to get a kenas, which is an untenable reading of the Mishnah. Good, don't read the Mishnah that way. Meaning all the Mishnah is telling us is that despite the fact that she's a psula, she's still going to be receiving a kenas. Or to be more accurate, the father of this woman is going to be receiving a kenas. That's number one. Number two, the second point of the Gemara is that kenas is only for a nara, not for a katana. Right, which is the opinion of Rebbe Meir. The Chachamim disagree. Chachamim are of the position that a kenas is going to go to a nara and to a katana as well. And then that basically takes us through the Amud Aleph on the Amud Beis of today's daf. How do I know? How do I know that these halachas are not bundled together? How do I know that there can be a decoupling of these halachas? The Gemara it takes us through the drashas. The Gemara doesn't give us a svara. The Gemara simply has a series of drashas. Reish Lakish and Rav Papa. Okay, I'll give myself one more check for saying it right today. So Reish Lakish and Rav Papa give us the total of six different drashas that we have from the Psukim. Nara, Naara, Hanara, Besulos, Besulos, Ha Besulos. And then, after taking the sum total of the six different drashas, so two of them are to teach us the baseline halacha, two of them are to teach me the halachas, one for Abaye, and the other for the Gzeres Shava, and then two more to teach me Chayve Lav and Chayve Krisus. I like that. I said it quickly and well. And then finally, the last thing that we noted in today's daf is that there are Tanaim who don't agree with our Mishnah. There are Tanaim who are of the position that these halachas are not to be decoupled. And if you can't marry her, there's not going to be a kenas. And who are they? They're the two Rabbi Shimon's who are Tanaim, Rabbi Shimon Atemani and Rabbi Shimon Memenasya, who sound like they're saying basically the same point. And what we did at the end of today's daf, and we're going to continue tomorrow, is subtle differences between their positions. There's going to be a nafkamina between them. What is the nafkamina? So far we gave two suggestions tomorrow. If I'm not mistaken, I think we're going to give another two.